Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's talk, given by meditation instructor Eric Weinberg, is the first in a series examining the book Freedom Through Meditation by His Holiness the 17th Karmapa. Talk 1, Love and Compassion Are Critical to Our Lives. The first step is to train in responding based on kindness and compassion rather than fixation, dislike, and willful ignorance. Our kindness and compassion muscles are generally a little underused and flabby, maybe even unhealthy. To bring them back to good health, the Buddha taught meditation practices that are a way of being kind and compassionate toward ourselves and develop the skill and strength needed to create kind and compassionate spaces for others. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
It's a beautiful day in Columbus. Thank you for coming. I will do my best to begin this book that we're beginning. This is called Freedom Through Meditation, and it's available at the bookstore. I think it's pretty excellent, at least what I've seen so far. I haven't read through the whole thing. And it's a couple years ago, Karmapa made his first trip to Canada and kind of retraced the steps of a journey that the 16th Karmapa took maybe a couple decades ago across Canada to give teachings. And so they collected some of the teachings that he gave, including some of the teachings he gave during empowerments, which is really something. And the idea was to create a short book that would at least point at a complete path of meditation that was simple and accessible. And it's 11 chapters, so we're going to do 11 talks on this. And today I'm just going to briefly cover the introduction and the first chapter, which is not long. But I think it's really profound. Normally, when you're talking about meditation, you would think that the first chapter would say something like, you already have what you seek within you. All you have to do is uncover it. So the first thing is to train in letting go of your normal discursive thinking, which gets in the way of actually seeing your enlightened nature. Well, that isn't where he starts. That's where I would start. But, you know, he actually starts with kindness and compassion. It's really interesting and really powerful. There are some recent discoveries, archaeological discoveries, called the Gandhari scriptures. They were found in a cave, I think it was in Afghanistan, and they're ancient. They're even more ancient than the Buddhist texts we have in the Pali from southern India, which were always before now considered to be the most ancient writings. And the only reason, of course, they survived was that it's desert out there, so there's no humidity, and these very delicate scrolls were preserved in jars. And they started looking through them, and there's nothing really contradictory or earth-shattering, but what they found was that some of the things we thought were the second teachings of the Buddha, if you look at these, the oldest written down scriptures, at least for this community, some of what we call the second turning of the wheel or Mahayana actually are the things that come first in those scriptures. And those teachings are teachings on kindness and compassion. And they're teachings on interdependence and emptiness. Emptiness, just as a little side note, is obviously a large and complicated philosophical concept that people wrestle with. But for us simple people, it's simply that we normally see ourselves as individuals, and there's me and there's you, and I'm talking to you, and maybe you're listening to me, maybe not, whatever, but we see ourselves as separate. The idea of emptiness is that reality is actually empty of that separateness. When we think of emptiness, the question, the good question to ask is, what are things empty of? And what things are empty of is separateness. This original teaching of the Buddha, one of the highlights was interdependence, that we're all actually connected. Not that we're all one thing, but we're all connected to each other. And out of that grew, of course, the first thing should be and was the teachings on kindness and compassion. Because how do you want to be connected to each other? That's the best way. Because we're all ultimately motivated by happiness, right? And it doesn't make us particularly happy. Even when we get everything that we think we want or avoid everything we think we don't want, our own experience tells us what makes us happy is when we feel this warm, living connection to one another. So that was the first teaching. It's like, okay, let's work on those muscles first. I'll get to the muscle part later. I often think of, you know, our real strong muscles are rugged independence and selfhood, in a sense. And if we don't have it, we're struggling for it. And if we do have it, well, we're strong with it. We're real muscle heads. There's these flabby muscles, though, that we also have. And these are the muscles of really being able to recognize and build relationships. And of course, the only way to really do that is kindness and compassion. So we're a little flabby in that area. And that's why the Buddhist practices are practices of kindness and compassion. It's just like going to the gym. We've got to work those things out to get them strong and bring our own minds into balance, you know. Muscle balance, I don't know if there are any physical therapists here, but muscle balance is a big thing. When you're a little too strong in some muscles and weak in others, you end up having problems. You know, you get like weird curvatures of the spine and you get just all kinds of deformities. So in order to bring us up and get us stronger, we've got to start with the things that we're weak in. And so the Buddha, apparently, according to archaeologists, and Karmapa, who, at least in my mind, is a living Buddha, start with kindness and compassion. And that's what the first chapter is about. Before I launch into it, though, I really like to invite directly this spirit of goodness. You know, invite our awareness to recognize the spirit of goodness that's inherent in us and interdependence, our connection with one another through chanting the refuge prayer. It's on this sheet here. I'd like to chant it 3 times in Tibetan because I think tunes are powerful. Actually, I think they kind of vibrate you in a way that just words don't, words on their own. The tune goes with the Tibetan words, which that's a little weird because probably nobody in here, including me, is a Tibetan speaker. But that's okay. Picking up the feeling of the thing and recognizing that we're taking refuge in fundamental goodness and each other and the connection to fundamental goodness in each other, that's really what the refuge prayer is about. And it's about the qualities that develop along the way. When they say the merit of generosity and other good deeds, they're referring to the six perfections, which are generosity, and ethics, patience, joyful diligence, meditation, and wisdom, which all develop on the path. They all sound like good stuff. So, I mean, I feel like since I'm motivated for happiness, I think I'd be happy if I actually possessed any of those or all those. That'd be great. So what this prayer teaches is that simply by being here and learning the Dharma and then making some aspiration to practice it and then practicing it, we will actually naturally start engendering these six qualities. And it's a powerful thing. And it becomes a powerful thing for yourself and for the sake of all beings because they're naturally that way. That's the way they're set up. It's sort of a beautiful thing. So if you chant it along with me with goodness and connection in mind, we'll see what kind of energy we can bring to this room. Sanje chudang so ki cho nam la Jang chu pardu dak ni kyab su chi Dagi jin so gi pe so nam ki Rola pin shir sanje drupa sho Sanje chudang so ki chok nam la Jangju pardu dak ni kyab su chi Daki jin so ki pe so nam ki Drola pin shir sanje drupa sho Sanje chudang so ki chok nam la Jangju pardu dak ni kyab su chi Dagi jin so gi pe so nam gi Drola pin shir sanje drupa sho. Thank you. Okay, so what is he talking about here? In this book, the chapters each have a heading, and they are a quote from the body of it. And the heading for this first chapter is, we need to train in loving kindness and compassion, just as we need physical exercise. Like I said, flabby muscles. So he starts out with what it is that we're bombarded with every day. From the first chapter, he says, generally everyone wishes for peace and happiness in the world. But when we look at the actual situation here on our planet, we can see that violence has erupted in many places, such as the Middle East. We could lose our hope for world peace, which seems to be slipping off the horizon. But actually, the most important cause for peace and happiness is within our reach. to have peace and happiness in our own minds through the power of love and compassion. It's really the first concern. I remember when I first met a great teacher that used to travel to Central Ohio. I think doesn't so much anymore because he's gotten older. A teacher named Garchen Rinpoche. I had a chance to talk to him, and I asked him. He was when the Chinese invaded Tibet in 59. He was one of the ones that didn't get away. They captured him and put him in a prison camp, and they tortured him along with other monks. A lot of people died in those camps. And when you meet him, if you meet him, I hope you do, he's like one of the sweetest human beings on the planet. I mean, you can almost taste him when he walks in a room. It's just unbelievable. And he emanates that sweetness. And so I asked him, what was the scariest thing for him when he was in prison camp? And I thought it would, you know, it could be anything. He could have lost his life. He could have lost, you know, his ability to practice. He could have lost whatever. All the things, you know, he certainly lost pretty much everything in the material world. And he said the most frightening thing for him was that he could have lost compassion for his captors, for the people torturing him, which kind of blew me away. Why is that frightening? Well, if what this says is true, compassion and kindness are actually the causes and conditions for the liberation from suffering. If you've got compassion in your heart and you let your muscles be flabby, so to speak, and you can become overwhelmed and lose your compassion, you also lose the doorway to liberation. And since we're all motivated and desire happiness and liberation from suffering, of course, that's what we want. He hit the nail right on the head, of course. I mean, the guy is just a walking insight. Yeah, he's a walking Buddha, so, you know, whatever. But he hit the nail right on the head like that. You know, he realized that even though these people were doing hateful things to his body, it was important that his mind keep compassion. And he understood how obscured and how lost they were to even be able to do that. And so his practice, he used that to practice. He used that to strengthen his own flabby compassion muscles. And now they're, believe me, they're pretty strong. And you know, I didn't know him back then, of course, but I've seen him now, and I can say that the result of that, of not getting hooked by the way he wanted to react, but sticking to using all of it in order to develop an even deeper energy, a stronger mental muscle of kindness and compassion, has not only brought him to a place of obvious happiness, but also brought him to a place where he's benefited me and like millions of others. It's a remarkable thing. So what Karmapa is saying here is using all of this, including all of the trauma that we're experiencing in our society right now, politically and culturally and in every way that you experience it, using it all as a goad to start and persist in compassion practices is a powerful thing. I'm not saying that, you know, while we're confronted with difficult circumstances right now, we are. They're not quite Chinese prison camp torture circumstances, but we can use what it is we're getting. And that's what Karmapa is asking us to do, because we don't know who we'll end up influencing. We're connected to everybody. And now and then those connections become points of influence, and we can literally bring peace, maybe in a little micro sense, in our own little world, but also who knows who those people are. Somebody might get an insight and bring it to a place that has an effect on the whole world. It's in some way a really our only hope, you know? What was it? Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're our only hope? Actually, no, it's kindness and compassion, you're our only hope. Karmapa says to create internal and external peace. Taking this path of practice is crucial. We are social animals living in community, no doubt about it. So developing some great affection for others, while it may not be natural, in the sense that, you know, we get distracted by what we think we want, and distracted by avoiding what we think we don't want. We got to take that and turn it around and use that to build our muscles, because we need this affection. We can't live without this affection. He talks a little bit about babies and, you know, parents and how parents care for babies and the affectionate way that they do. And if they didn't, there'd be no babies and there'd be no humans, and that would be that. Makes a lot of sense. Well, you know, the idea that that should stop at some place, at some point, that's a mistake. We're born with the capacities to give and receive love. You can see it in every single family there is. And it has to be nurtured. If it's not nurtured, if it's not taught, then we wind up not having, at very best, flabby muscles, or maybe not having any at all in that regard. He says it's a lot like language skills. Language skills need to be nurtured. If a baby's born and left to grow up in an isolated place, devoid of humans, like raised by wolves, right? They will not learn to talk, even though there's an inherent skill for talking in humans. Even though there's an inherent skill to communicate in one way or another, you won't learn it unless you're around it. He says it's the same with love and compassion. So this idea of practicing it at all times and being part of the environment that encourages everyone that you run into, simply by your presence, you encourage that language of love to actually develop. The vocabulary can expand endlessly, just like your ability to speak English or Tibetan or French or Chinese or whatever languages it is. If you want, it can grow and grow and grow. There's also, I see a great musician in the back row. Hi, Ryan. There's a language in music, too. Takes a lot of practice to be able to speak that language in a way that moves people, right? Just knowing about it isn't enough. I can tell you this. When I was in college, in freshman and sophomore year, I actually took music theory classes. So I know some music theory, at least freshman and sophomore. I'm not saying I'm like Holst or somebody, some great composer, but I never practice any instrument. And if there's a piano in here somewhere, I think, I don't know. If I went and sat down and tried to play it, you would hold your ears. It would be really bad. It's because I never practice it. Knowing about it's not enough. Just not. So we end up having practices that help us develop these this language, these skills, these strengths in our lives. And it becomes very important. I mean, of the utmost importance, because most of us aren't yet Buddhas. I don't know, maybe some are. I'm not enough of a Buddha to recognize it. So, you know. But these practices are a tried and true path, just like running scales if you're a musician trying to learn to play piano are a tried and true path. You may hate running scales. I mean, that's why I don't practice anything. Seriously, my harmonica, however, is here. That's another thing. Meditation's the same way. So having a daily practice, or maybe multiple practices throughout the day, is really important. Not because in and of itself is anything but practice. It's not. That's why we call it practice. But it's because we need these strengths of kindness and compassion for the benefit of ourselves and for the whole world. This is where world peace will come from, if it ever comes. It's not going to be because we know something new. That's not enough. Were that it was enough, but obviously we know what we need to know. We understand a lot about social conditioning, and we understand a lot about global politics and history and all that kind of thing. And yet, we can't get over ourselves enough for peace to happen. Well, we're not in positions, nobody in this room, as far as I know, are not in position to bring that to the table in the cabinet room at the White House and all of that. Maybe someday. But we can start working on it in our own lives, and that's really valuable. That's all there is, because frankly, that's all that those people have to do too. It's not complex. We run into some obstacles with this. I'm going to read you something that I love, that kind of defines the problem in a way that tickles me and kind of puts its finger right on what we're dealing with. Wanting positive experience is a negative experience. Accepting negative experience is a positive experience. It's what philosopher Alan Watts used to refer to as the backwards law. The idea that the more you pursue feeling better all the time, the less satisfied you become, as pursuing something only reinforces the fact that you lack it in the first place. The more you desperately want to be rich, the more poor and unworthy you feel, regardless of how much money you actually make. The more you desperately want to be sexy and desired, the uglier you come to see yourself, regardless of your actual physical appearance. The more you desperately want to be happy and loved, the lonelier and more afraid you become. Regardless of those who surround you, the more you want to be spiritually enlightened, the more self-centered and shallow you become in trying to get there. That's the backwards law. So what's the answer? It's kindness and compassion. First Lojong slogan, start with yourself. So you look and you see, I wish I had more resources. Have compassion for that. Be kind about that and understanding, and do what you can to help yourself. And realize that, you know, you can work towards goals in a way that that's compassionate. In other words, that removes suffering instead of causes more suffering. It's like that. So when those desires come up, even though desiring something in itself or clinging or fixating on something is going to lead you down the wrong path, you look at it and you lean into it and you say, oh, there I am thinking I don't have something. And that motivation is something that's probably gotten you far in life. It's gotten you a certain amount of accomplishment. But you can also say, you know, there are problems that come along with that. I'm going in a good direction. I don't need that anymore. And you can say thank you to that little voice in your head that says you're not wealthy enough in some way, or have enough resources, or not pretty enough, or not spiritual enough, or not enough. And you say, thank you, because you've helped me understand what I deeply desire. You got me going, but I don't need you anymore. You can go now. I'm in a good direction. That's the first step. And the second step is that you can have compassion for your captors, even if they're internal. Don't lose compassion for those that you feel, those limitations that you feel that you have internally. Be kind to them and recognize that you're not alone in that. Others want to be happy and they feel the same thing. And maybe by understanding it deeply, you can make a deeper connection that's kind to others. That's what he's talking about here. That's powerful. That's what builds community. That's something that, what do they say? You can't learn that from books. You can only learn that from doing things. And we find out that we learn a lot from each other. I naturally had this strong desire to be spiritual, you know, like the last line of that thing that I read. I didn't really wake up and realize that that was itself an obstacle until I started volunteering in the prisons. And I recognized those guys are physically imprisoned and they are choosing a spiritual path to try to be liberated, and they have an even deeper desire in some sense. And then with compassion and kindness for each other, they towards me and me towards them, a whole other thing unfolded where we feel this kind of support, which is really what we wanted. We misidentify it all the time. We miss it. We think we need this or that to be happy, but really what we're looking for is this warm connection to each other and this warm connection to reality. That goes for his teachings on the environment too. That's exactly what he's saying, is we're all born in the lap of this mother who cares for us, and now we have to care for her. We're all born into the community of humans and other living beings, and they care for us in a lot of ways. They give up their lives for us. Even if you're a vegetarian or a vegan, believe me, tilling the fields kills more beetles than and other kinds of bugs in growing crops than any other kind of animal husbandry. So it's not about being arrogant that, oh, I'm so good and so just that I'm not harming beings. That's not it. We deeply have to understand that we care for each other and do our best to do that without the pride and the arrogance that gets in our way, because being prideful about stuff is simply saying that things aren't equal, things aren't connected, I'm better than fill in the blank. It's not like that. Being jealous of others, what is that? It's like this thing I was saying, it's the backwards law. It's, I don't have the strength within me to accomplish what it is that I think I need to be happy. All the teachings that are here about kindness and compassion are about flipping all those things over so that jealousy becomes all accomplishing wisdom. It's like, I can accomplish what I need to accomplish. I can do it. And pride, thank you, but I don't need you anymore because I see that I'm connected to all of this and all of these, and together we can actually make something great. We are making something great. That's where the strength of Sangha comes from, and so on. He says, there are many challenges, however, to developing loving kindness and compassion. Just being content to hear someone talk about them is not enough. We need a sincere and heartfelt enthusiasm to motivate us and sustain us, because we will be challenged on this path, mainly by our own self-centeredness and pride, which are quite powerful. Our ego fixation causes us to set ourselves apart, thinking that we are special and cut off from others. It is as if we had closed ourselves off in an iron cage of self-absorption. In this state, we lose our consideration for others, and only a few people are allowed to connect with us. Slowly, the warmth of our affection and compassion for them cools, and they in turn lose their affection and compassion for us. Eventually, our relationships will turn cold, and we will wind up in a cruel world devoid of warmth and love. Karmapa said that. We need to train in loving kindness and compassion just as we do in physical exercise. Fuzzy hopes and tepid aspirations are not enough. We must practice working against our ego's resistance so that we have the strength to overcome it and become truly loving and compassionate. Usually, when we think that we are meditating, we're thinking in terms of subject and object. An individual subject who meditates on compassion as an object. But we should transcend this duality. We should feel that we've become the very essence of compassion. He closes this chapter by talking a little bit about Chenrezig Avalokiteshvara, who represents compassion. I think he's the guy in the middle there, right? So he talks about some depictions of Chenrezig having 1,000 arms, and in each hand there's an eye. And the idea is that there's a way of seeing each individual and embracing each individual. The word Chenrezig in Tibetan is a Tibetan word, and it actually translates directly into loving eyes, which I've always liked. So here's a couple pieces of advice in terms of training and compassion. Because we all understand that we're not full of perfect insight. And compassion involves removing suffering from others. Kindness is defined as offering goodness to others. Generosity is kindness, and so on. Choosing to be ethical is kindness. Compassion is removing suffering. Compassion involves some insight and skill, what we call in Buddhist terminology, skillful means, because it involves doing the right thing in the right way to the right person at the right time. That's a lot and requires some insight. How often have we tried to help and we only make things worse? I mean, I do it all the time. So how do we develop this inner sense of insight and resonance? Well, that's what the practices are about. And the first thing for every practice, and we don't say this explicitly often enough, sometimes it gets said, start with a smile. Just smile. Smile right now. You all look very serious. Smile a little bit and see how that feels. Smile to yourself. Smile to your own mind, to your own body, to your heart. And think about smiling with your eyes when you look at others. Loving eyes. So when we do Chenrezig practice, which is the core practice for this center, it's the practice that when the great Tibetan lamas originally came to America and were asked what practices Americans seem to need to do, they gave us a couple different suggestions. One, they said we should practice calm abiding meditation. Another was that ultimately we should be practicing Mahamudra. And as a puja type practice, they recommended we practice Chenrezig above all other practices, which is, Chenrezig is the embodiment of compassion, of loving eyes. So the most profound, easiest, quickest, off the cushion, on the cushion, all the time practice of Chenrezig is to just think to yourself, I'm looking with loving eyes on whatever it is you see. It'll change the way that your insight comes up about people and about situations. It'll change everything just to look with loving eyes. So a little kind of internal smile and loving eyes is the embodiment of Chenrezig. When we practice Chenrezig, we start with a little bit of calm abiding meditation, shamatha, where we just settle down and we notice our thoughts arising and we let them go and bring our mind back to attention on this sweetness, on this smile. In basic shamatha meditation, we use our breath. There's always an object, though, for our mind to rest on. And then when we calm down a minute and we realize that we have the power to let go of a thought, whether it's a positive thought or a negative thought, one of these thoughts that are afflictive or not, we can begin. And, you know, some of you are familiar with the practice, but basically you invoke this bodhisattva of compassion and visualize in as clear a way as possible for you. And it doesn't matter. You know, we all, if you do it for a long time, it gets very clear. And at the beginning, it's not very clear. Just doing it is very powerful, very positive. And you realize that this loving presence, this warm, luminous smile, loving eyes is present with you and with everybody else that you're with. So there are various parts of the practice, some supplications and some meditations that are in it, and some mantra chanting and so on and so forth. But eventually, you dissolve this imagination of loving eyes into light and into yourself, and it's like pouring water into water, and they mix inseparably. Or pouring milk into water. Let's say that. Better analogy, because you're changed. The water's changed. And the weird thing about it is, if you do that, you can't get those things apart. When they're mixed, they're mixed. And it dissolves into everybody else too. So whether they know it or not, you've mentally offered a blessing to every sentient being and to yourself. At the end of the practice, we dissolve all of that imagination. Just, and here's the way I like it. This is just me. I like, in some of the texts they say to do this, imagine that 10,000 rays of light emanate from every pore of your body. And that as it emanates, you just dissolve along those rays of light and become a blessing for the entire universe. Just like lights mixed immeasurably, immeasurably, but also inseparably in the sky. You're mixed inseparably as a blessing in the universe. And your mind gets really quiet, and it might only be really quiet for like that long. As soon as a thought comes back, whatever it is, you just change it back to I'm Chenrezig. You return to this state of loving eyes, and you go about your day. I've always fantasized that someday I'll need a jacket with four arms instead of just two, but it hasn't happened yet. So you can see that if you do that, that's some heavy lifting mentally, because you're taking all your normal thought about what you're usually thinking and concerned about and just letting it go and developing the muscle of seeing yourself as this compassionate blessing. That's a real developmental process, right? And it's not like you're turning into something else. You're already that. It's just developing that muscle that hasn't had quite enough gym time yet. So if you do that every day, it'll definitely transform your life in terms of becoming more insightful in how to be kind and compassionate in every moment. It'll come, just comes naturally, because it's already a part of you. And since that is the genuine empirical truth of happiness, you know, that's how we achieve happiness, is through kindness and compassion, you become happier. Some natural joy starts to bubble up a little bit, even in the most difficult situations. That becomes noticeable. And that's when it starts to infect other people. And I mean infect in a good way. So that's what he's talking about here. It's like we've got a global problem, but we have an individual solution. And it's up to us. It's really up to us. So, what does he say here? He says it beautifully. The ability and unwavering dedication to move into action and benefit others in myriad ways. So it's not just about learning stuff. Learning stuff's good. I'm not against it. It's not just even about practicing on the cushion. It's actually allowing doing it in such a way that it transforms you and it becomes part of the marrow of your bones, part of the way that you walk around on this planet with each other. He says, we become able to look at people and the world with eyes of compassion, so that seeing others itself becomes an activity of love and compassion. I want to close with a quick story, and then there'll be time for questions or comments at the question mic, if people have them. This is a story from the Hindu tradition called the Ramayana. The Ramayana is one of the two major sacred texts, story texts in Hinduism. It's about the story of Rama. And Rama is like, he's an important god type being. And he had a beloved Sita that was kidnapped by evil. So you could think about this. Rama is like wisdom personified, like the Buddha is wisdom personified. Sita is like the activities and qualities of living. So it's like Buddhas and Dakinis, okay? And Sita gets kidnapped by Ravana, who's like selfish guy. He's the bad guy. And his main quality is really selfishness. And so it's the same way our own energies and qualities get co-opted sometimes by selfishness, right? And the whole story is about finding where Ravana is in his kingdom, and liberating Sita, the divine, the energy, and the qualities of consciousness, and liberating her from this king of lies, is what he's called, this selfishness. The hero of the story, though, isn't Rama. Rama's leading an army, but he's not having any success. There's a monkey named Hanuman. Hanuman is like the monkey god who is known as the servant of Rama. And he became powerful out of his devotion and service. And out of devotion and service, he grew large and he grew powerful. And it was out of compassion and wanting to liberate these qualities and energies from selfishness. And he found Sita in Lanka and he was flying around, and there's a whole great battle scene. Anyway, I won't go into the details of that, although they are fabulous. You should read the Ramayana if you get the chance. And he ends up liberating Sita and brings her back to Rama, and Rama wants to reward him, and so he gives him his own ring. This is like Tolkien stuff, you know. It's one of the magic ring, the magic ring, right? And Hanuman looks at this ring. Everybody's celebrating and happy because she's back and all of that. And he looks at this ring and he looks at it and he says, this has no value. And he bites into it and he's so powerful that he crushes it into powder. And everybody is saying, you're nuts, man. That was like the magic ring. And Rama said, monkey, what are you doing? I just gave you my own ring. And Hanuman said, this is a worthless thing. And then he takes his fingers and he rips open his chest. And everybody could see that written on his bones were Rama, 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 Rama. In other words, he allowed devotion and love for this union of wisdom, qualities, and activity. He had such devotion for that that it etched itself on the bones of his body. And he said, this is what's valuable. And that's the end of the story. So that's what our practice is really about, is a way of transforming ourselves at every level to the point where it etches itself on us. So that everything that's flowing into us and out of us is also transformed into love and compassion. And when that happens, that's what the Buddha called awakening. That's what awakening means. Since those are the causes and conditions for being free from suffering, it destroys suffering, which was the goal the Buddha had from the first teaching of the Four Noble Truths. So that's the end of the talk. There's a little bit. Thank you for your attention. There's a little bit of time. So if you have comments, questions, criticisms, it's time for you to stump the chump. I guess I left you spellbound. Seriously, nothing, huh? Okay. Well, then let's... Oh, Jim's got one.
I did, on the learning compassion, I have to admit a lot of my personality, you know, is basically formed when I was 14, you know, in a lot of ways. And meditation, I find I kind of oscillate between like a child who just wants to, you know, hear, tell, and be told stories and things, you know, have fun, you know, enjoy life, and in kind of a bully, you know, sort of like just, you know, try to, you know, which I think we all develop just a sort of, you know, some kind of protection from the world. And what seems to be lacking is really, a lot of times, is just teaching. You know, I mean, we've all gone through the education system.
Yes.
And, but, you know, if any kind of like true, you know, teaching, and that seems to be a lot of the goal that I could see is to try to learn how, because a lot of, I mean, there's a lot of people I've grown, you know, my life, you know, it seems to know a lot. You know, I didn't have a rough life. I mean, I, you know, came from a middle-class family, but it seemed to me like, a lot of people could see my, you know, what I don't know, and they would just go, ha ha, you know, and, you know, walk away. And they would just, you know, they would hoard their knowledge. That seems to be a lot of what happens in the world. It was a lot of the, you know, a lot of the pain. And here's people hoarding their knowledge more than just resources. It's really knowledge. You know, I think I mentioned playing golf, how petty that seems. That's an important thing, you know, you think about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a very exclusive club of people who can play golf. So I think I guess it's learning how to teach is the most important thing. You're teaching right now, and without, you know, developing arrogance, it seems very tough. I'm far from being, you know, worrying about losing my compassion for torturers or whatever. I can't even drive through traffic without getting that, you know, but. That seems like I'm far from that, you know, kind of even having that as a concern. But I think, you know, just at my level is learning how to teach. It seems very difficult. So that's all I have, I guess.
Thank you. But. You know, I think I think that's a really great observation. I have two thoughts to come to mind about that. One is we've, in our culture, done a weird thing. I mean, when I grew up, you weren't supposed to talk about religion or politics. And those are the very things that we need to learn to talk about. And now we're really divided because we've forgotten how to talk about important things to each other. And I think you're right. We need to learn how to do that. I teach a little bit now. And some of it has to do... It's so funny. In the beginning, I wanted to. And I was basically told no, you know, because when I came to Buddhism, I'd already been meditating for, I don't know, 20 some years. And I thought, well, I'm ready. Just turn me loose. Well, I wasn't ready. And then after a few years of practicing in this lineage, I was shocked, because then the no turned to a yes, and like, we want you to do this. And then I tried to do it, and mostly, in my opinion, fell flat on my face a lot. Like you do when you start to do anything, you know, like riding a bike, you fall over more than, you need some training wheels, you know, you fall over until you figure out how to get your balance. So it takes, we do need to share with one another the important things. And it takes a little bit of courage and a little bit of devil may care attitude. I don't care if I mess up, you know. If I mess up, okay, I messed up. And you just recognize, oh, I messed up, and you fix it. You know, you just say, okay, I'll fix it. I'll turn it around, and I'll try to do better next time. We all need to have that kind of courage, I think. There are college professors here, you know. There are people who have taught in all kinds of things. I think that's what we all experience when we try to be helpful. That's that skillful means thing. It requires building some muscles, and at first you're not going to be able to do it properly. That doesn't mean we shouldn't try. We need to try. And we need to get over ourselves in order to do it, because there's going to be times when it's not so good. And those can be the best times, because guess what? That's what you learn from. And that's what we have to do, at least until we're Buddhas. I have no idea where that is. I just have faith that'll happen someday or some lifetime. But in the meantime, we need to help each other share our resources. I hope that people pray for me when I'm trying to give a talk, honestly, because God knows I need it. It's the truth. So,
I don't know. I read a lot of history and things. It used to be in China, you know, the Confucius and exams, and they were like, you couldn't be anything unless you passed these exams.
Yeah.
And they were like, it's just a lot of crap, probably.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just had to, you know, be proficient in. And in my experience in the world, you know, basically in my profession, you know, IT and things, it's like, it's a lot of jealousy.
Mm-hmm.
People, like, really suspicious, like, very scared, a lot of fear.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people know more than they do, you know, so they're going to try to discredit whoever might get in their way. And so there's not like a lot of teaching. There's a lot of
right
lack of teaching.
Yeah.
You just read about, well, just in history, so many people who are like the Byzantine Empire fell because, you know, the jealousies. They would destroy a good general because of fear, and he would just be executed, have his eyes put out or whatever, you know, and just, well, I don't have to worry about him anymore, and the Turks come along. That's all I have. I don't think I have questions.
One of the differences in the tradition that came from Tibet is this idea of lineage, living lineage, so that this is not everybody's karmapa, okay? We all know that. But we receive his teachings, and then we start talking with each other about them, and we learn how to share them in a way that's helpful right where we are, for the people who are around us right where we are. In that way, sticking with lineage, we don't go off the rails and start doing stuff that's saying things that are crazy and unhelpful, because that can happen too, right? But if we stick with the lineage, we can be pretty sure that we've got something genuine. And then by sharing it with each other, we build community. We build sangha. And we build some kind of ability to share in whatever way we uniquely can share. It's a much more integrated way than this idea that I possess some knowledge and you got to pay me for it, or you can't have it in any case, or whatever, you know, which is the other model. And it's like not helpful in building community. It's harmful. So I agree with you. We got to get over that.
You create like a model to live by, and it's very stagnant. You know, everyone's got to have to, you know, follow certain rules. And I'm kind of babbling right now, so
it's all right. Actually, that was great. So that's the conclusion of the Dharma talk for this morning. Let's take a minute and dedicate the merit. We can just read it together in English. But while we're reading it, just imagine that all the goodness of being together with loving eyes and hearing the Dharma just pours out of us like 10,000 rays of light out of each pore and blesses the entire universe, all beings without exception. By this merit, may all attain omniscience. May it defeat the enemy wrongdoing. From the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara, may I free all beings. The courageous Manjushri, who knows everything as it is, Samantabhadra, who knows in the same way, and all the bodhisattvas, that I may follow in their path, I completely dedicate all this virtue. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.